I am Planta on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. When Ian Gill was on the program last year for his book, No News is Bad News, he made mention of his work at Discourse Media. They've just announced a $1 million investment drive offering Canadians a chance to become owners of the fast-growing and critically acclaimed journalism startup. It's already valued at $4.25 million. From now to December 21st, Canadians can invest through Front Funder, where individuals can buy equity in private companies for a minimum investment of $250. Joining me now is Erin Miller. She is a journalist and entrepreneur and the CEO and editor-in-chief of Discourse Media. She and the executive staff have created a company that's dedicated to in-depth reporting on issues that matter to Canadians and have thus far yielded independent and award-winning reporting, and they've managed to earn a profit. I'll get Ms. Miller to tell us how and just how to invest, and perhaps more importantly, why. I'll also ask her if, despite good work, Canadians are willing to pay and subscribe to journalism when in recent years we've been thus far reticent to do so. Visit discoursemedia.org for more information. Please welcome to the Planta Online program, Erin Miller. Ms. Miller, good morning.
Hi, how are you?
Pretty good yourself.
I'm great.
So since the announcement, did I read that correctly, that you've got something like 200,000 pledges already?
Yeah, so the overall goal is to raise $1 million to take Discourse Media national, and we've already got, we're hoping that half of that comes through the Front Funder campaign from regular people, uh-huh. And we've already got almost $220,000 in the process of making investments, so that's really exciting. And we have another $250,000 that's already come in, so we're almost halfway there, so yeah. Feeling really good.
Yeah, so we'll talk about just how people can get in on this, but for people listening to this who aren't familiar with Discourse and the work you've done thus far, how does it work right now in terms of the company that you're running?
Sure. So we are a digital news media company that's dedicated to community-based investigative journalism. So what that means is we're trying to take the best from the tradition of journalism, verification, independence, really producing high-value, trustworthy journalism, and combine that with community engagement practices that this new era of technology and social media allow us to do, so that we're producing investigative journalism that's much more responsive to what our communities actually need in terms of the information that they need in order to help us address some of the really complex challenges facing our communities.
And so some of the work so far, where has that appeared?
Sure. So we're a 3.5-year-old company, and we've produced projects ranging from an investigation into energy poverty in Africa and the role of Canadian mining companies. So that was a project that we did collaboratively. It's all published on our website and through our social media channels, but also with other media outlets, including some local media outlets in Africa, and The Guardian was our international partner on that, to things that are much more local. So we've also done data journalism project on how population changes in Metro Vancouver are going to change our transportation system. And we did that when the referendum was happening here a couple of years ago. And on our data journalism appeared again on our own website, but also in 14 different media outlets across the region.
Yeah, and some of the stuff has won awards already, is that right?
Yeah, so we've been recognized with national and international awards, including a Murrow Award, which is an international award that recognizes high-quality investigative reporting. So that was a huge feather in our cap, for sure.
Yeah. So at a 3.5-year-old company, I understand that the value of that is just over $4 million. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. So we just went through the process of putting a value on the company, which is definitely part science and part art. that was part of the negotiations that we went through with our lead investor, who has put $250,000 into the company. And then also had to go through the due diligence process with the Front Funder team, which is the company that is actually doing this crowd financing equity raise for us. So we had to pass through that to ensure that the investors that they're bringing in through the crowd financing piece of it really can have confidence in our strategy and that our valuation is fair and backed up by rigorous analysis. So, yeah.
And then the profits in the past year have been about $1 million?
Not profits. That's been our revenue.
Oh, revenue, pardon me.
Yeah. So we have been every bit of, up until now, we've been growing right at the pace of our revenue growth and really just plowing any extra cash that we have into growth and mostly just financing that through borrowing a little bit of money here and there from friends and family and that kind of thing. So this is the first time that we're actually raising growth capital to expand nationally, and the plan will have us breaking into break even and profitability in the fourth quarter of 2019. And at that point, the shareholders will begin receiving annual dividends, or we may offer buybacks to some shareholders, or we may be considering an acquisition at that point and really looking at sort of what have we built and what is the value of this at that point.
I guess people in the current media landscape are thinking that some of these legacy media outlets may be up for sale in the next little bit. I mean, is that what your sense is?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Post Media, we've been watching the newspaper industry really closely because they remain the primary source of original reporting in Canada. Uh-huh. And Post Media, the company that now has over 250 community newspapers, including the province of the Sun here in Vancouver, is really on the brink of bankruptcy. So we don't know what will happen. And a lot of those newspapers will likely be up for sale. And because it's currently owned by an American hedge fund. And that's sort of one of the reasons that we wanted to do this crowd financing strategy, because we really do believe that if we're creating a media company that's being built to serve Canadians, that we want it to be owned by Canadians too, so that our interests are all aligned and so that we can share in our success with our Canadian shareholders.
Just to establish what Discourse is and what it is so far, especially, who has invested in it previous to all this?
Previous to this current raise?
Yeah.
Previous to this current raise, it's been very much bootstrapping. So there has been no external investors. This is our first external raise. Uh-huh. So all of the money that we've used to grow the company up until now has either been through revenue growth, through my own, I'm the founder. So up until a couple of weeks ago, I was the only shareholder in the company. So I did lend some, borrow some money to help start the company myself personally. Mm-hmm. And then we also benefited from having a grant from the McConnell Family Foundation based in Montreal that gave us a two-year grant to help us get our business development process rolling and write a business plan and prepare ourselves for investment. So that was very, very helpful.
Yeah. So you mentioned already the amount of money raised through this. What do you think that says about what the public wants in terms of the journalism that they not only want, but the journalism that they need?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the public knows that our current media system is broken. There's still a lot of great journalism that happens, but it's also our newspapers have been getting thinner and thinner, and it's becoming harder and harder to find out what is happening at our city halls. And so much of the journalism that's out there, so much of the content that's out there, I shouldn't even call it journalism, mm-hmm. is just like designed simply to grab our attention, to get us, to sort of dupe us into clicking on something. And what the effect of that has been that a lot of regular people just like don't trust media outlets anymore. So we really see building trust with our community as being like the main issue. That's what we call them, a community as opposed to an audience, right?
Yeah.
We think that that's about a relationship. And I think the support that we've really received in the last couple weeks as we've launched this plan really demonstrates that people are ready for solutions. We've seen the decline of media happening for a long time, and this is really a turnaround point. So I'm actually more hopeful right now about the future of journalism than I have been in my whole career.
Yeah, and so the community, the audience, if you will, thus far have been unwilling to pay for journalism. What makes you think that they will now?
Yeah, I actually think that we're really at a turning point with that for three main reasons. One of them is that the advertising business model that has long supported journalism is really been completely disrupted.
we're really at a tipping point in terms of that. More than, just in the last year, more than 70% of Canadian digital ad dollars now go to Facebook and Google alone, and they saw 87% of the growth last year. So there's just nothing left there. That business model is dead. It's time to move on. And so for that reason, I think there really is a growing demand for high-quality journalism because we're seeing such cutbacks that the public is really, they've noticed now that, oh, wait, like my newspaper isn't what it used to be, or I no longer have a newspaper.
Yeah.
And we're only going to see that accelerate in the next couple of years. So that's one reason. The other reason is that we've actually seen people's behavior online change. So we're way more likely to pay now online for content that we value through subscription type products. So I'm talking about Netflix, Spotify, these sorts of things. Like,
yeah,
we're now seeing tens of millions of people around the world pay for high quality content that they value through these services. And that's just changed how what our behavior is online. And then thirdly, in the news business, we call it the Trump bump. And what that really is recognizing is that Trump's election really caused this moment of awareness in the public where people said, whoa, wait, what is happening to our public discourse? We really need journalism. It's so important. And if we want to see that, we need to pay for it. And that's led to a real bump in subscriptions to media outlets, both in the States and in Canada. Even the Globe and Mail is now getting more than half of their revenue from their audience. So I think that that says that here in Canada, we've been a little bit slower to shift towards audience-centered strategies and subscription and membership models, but it's really happening. So I see that growing a lot in the next decade.
Now, as a journalist, Aaron, do you find that the tactics that made Trump successful in the United States, do you feel that they'll trend northward, that in the next election cycle, say, will be subject to the same sort of rhetoric and the same sort of online tactics that we saw in this last election cycle in the United States?
Well, I definitely think that we are vulnerable to some of the same sort of external online tactics that we saw happen, like from, you know, these sort of clickbait fake news sites in other parts of the world, focusing on our own market. I think that we're definitely vulnerable to that, and there's been lots of evidence of that sort of thing still, you know, is happening. So, yes, I think we've already seen some of the politics of that here in Canada. For example, you know, we've just come through a provincial election here in British Columbia with some very similar tactics. And in terms of kind of drumming up some conflict between like rural and urban voters coming from the BC Liberals. So like we have seen that stuff. Luckily, Canadians do seem to be less vulnerable to that kind of really divisive politics. And I think that that is testament to the fact that we have a really strong public education system. So there really is this sort of base knowledge that we all share.
Yeah. So Front Funder, people can go there and look into this, and obviously if they choose to make an investment. Do you have a sense of who these people are who are investing so far?
Yeah, I mean, it's a real mix. There's some people in there who have been Discourse's supporters from the very beginning, who are now like being given like a real clear way to do that, who are, up to some people I've never even met before. So that's really exciting. I think that there's a lot of people who are somehow involved in the media industry who really want to see a successful example emerging that makes the argument that now is a really exciting time to invest in Canadian media, who are getting behind this. That's one of the groups that we've seen there. There's also a lot of people who are coming from who are really interested in the issues that we report on and want to support a media outlet that is dedicated to evidence-based, constructive, solutions-oriented coverage of reconciliation and land rights and energy poverty and child welfare and these issues that we really dig deep into. So we see people coming from that. And then there's some more traditional investors who see an opportunity in our company in the sort of moment in time that we're offering something really new in a market that is really underserved.
Now, what does an investment buy? I mean, would a large investment, say, yield any influence as to what's in what sort of journalism happens?
Every investor who is part of this, whether they are investing, the minimum investment is $250 or $250K, will get, you know, are recognized as a founding member of Discourse. So what that means is that when we launch our membership community publicly in early next year, that they will be recognized as a founding member, and they will have the same influence on our editorial content as any other member of Discourse. So no, it doesn't give you more right to influence our editorial than anyone else who's involved. However, we do really want that diverse community of shareholders in our governance structure to really keep us honest to our values and our mission. And that's one of the reasons that we've chosen to include a crowd equity campaign as part of the funding mix that's going to drive this national expansion.
Now, the goal, let's say you do get $1 million. The goal is to build investigative units across the country. What would they look like?
Sure. So our investigative units, we currently have 5 actively functioning based out of Vancouver, and the goal is to get to 20 across the country.
Mm-hmm.
So what they really are like collaborative teams that are digging deep into issues over the long haul. So they're led by a reporter. So, for example, I mentioned child welfare earlier. This is a reporter who has been devoted for over a year to digging into why child poverty is higher in Vancouver and sort of how the foster care system plays into that in BC. She works with a producer and editor and the rest of the team, including data journalists and social media experts and all these different people. She also partners with different people in the community, so that might be other media outlets. So she's currently organizing a dedicated day of reporting later this month where media outlets across the province are all reporting on this, and they're working together to build skills and think about solutions-oriented reporting and all those. She also has 2 young people who have recently aged out of the foster care system who are working with her and producing content alongside her, and they're as a part of a paid fellowship that we created for them. So they're really like collaborative units. That are both producing investigative content and very much engaged in the communities that their content is intended to serve.
Yeah, and because it's so expensive, bloody expensive to live in this town, they're able to receive a salary that allows them to stay here. Is that right?
Yeah, everybody who works here is making a living wage salary, and it's funny, somebody asked me this at our launch event in Toronto, somebody who's really committed to equitable work, and I told her, this is the first time in my career that I've had benefits. I had to create my own company to get benefits after working for some of the largest media outlets in the country, so I don't think that we've succeeded if we've created a new media outlet on the backs of, like, free internships and precarious work. So we've been committed to that from the very beginning, and it's a really important part of what we're trying to do.
Yeah. Some people, you know, appreciate investigative journalism and the sort, but are looking for an outlet for day-to-day journalism. I mean, is that something that you have your sights on, say, in the future?
Yes and no. So in this, the plan that we're currently raising investment for, which is the next 2 years, we are focused entirely on investigative journalism. And the reason for that is because there really is an oversupply of content out there. Like, we're consuming more content than we ever had before. And we really want to be responding to what we see as a gap in current coverage.
Yeah.
So instead of having our reporters covering the same thing that 7 other reporters are covering, we're always trying to work on something else. And we recognize that people have a lot of options and that we're never going to be the only thing that people consume. Like, that's just not how we consume media anymore. So during the next 2 year period, no. But one of the things that we are working on and currently testing and studying is how do we take this investigative unit model that's enabled by the technology that we're building and bring that to communities. So we're building communities right now around an issue area. But we want to be scaling that by bringing that to geographic communities where there's no longer a community newspaper, because we think that the deficit in local reporting is really a critical problem for democracy in Canada and also a huge business opportunity. So I think that there may be a time in the future where Discourse is also something that you would go to find out what's happening in your community in more sort of a news sense. But that's not something that we'll see. We're actually testing it in three communities in Northern Canada in the next 2 years, but we won't be bringing that to scale until 2020 and beyond.
Yeah. Now, it's important for you to be able to talk about this. What sort of response have you been getting from, say, the traditional or legacy media outlets? I mean, have they wanted to talk to you about this on their air so that the public can find out about all this?
Yeah, that's really interesting question, because we have a lot of partnerships with existing media. Like, the Globe and Mail has been one of our partners in the very beginning at Discourse, and I know that some people who work there are investors through our platform.
Uh-huh.
And yet it's been a little bit slow to get media coverage, and I don't want to speak for the Globe, because I'm not we haven't finished our conversations with them yet, but CBC particularly said that they wouldn't be able to cover this story, which I think is one of the most exciting developments in media in this country in the last decade. So, so there is definitely a little bit of we're collaborators with them, but we're also in competition, and
yeah.
I guess frenemies, that's a good line.
Yeah, there you go.
We'll all go for beers together, but it's still a little bit tricky for us to navigate what is our relationship as we move forward, and I would hope that they see us as a complement to the media, to a much more diverse media ecosystem that I hope emerges out of this decline that we're seeing.
Yeah, it must be frustrating, because, I mean, a lot of the public know that this is what they need and this is what they want,
mm-hmm.
and yet aren't able to find out about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, one thing that we have learned in the last few years, I'm very much a product of the legacy media system,
mm-hmm.
and I always had thought about them as sort of the gatekeeper to the public. And one thing that we've learned as a small organization is that some of our projects, when we really are creating something that is responding to a need and is something that other media outlets aren't covering and people are hungry for it, we are able to access really large audiences,
mm-hmm.
because we have the phenomenon of social media. People find us. And so, for example, the project that I mentioned earlier about transportation in the city, like, voters were really hungry for actual issue-based coverage about the referendum,
mm-hmm.
because all the coverage was just, like, so caught up in the politics and this mayor thinks that and the TransLink CEO makes too much money, and that doesn't actually help us make a decision about the
yeah.
referendum vote. So we partnered with a lot of different media outlets, and we were able to see the data about who was accessing our content from different places. And we found that Facebook coming directly to our own coverage of our data journalism packages was a way stronger audience driver than the news apps that we embedded in legacy media websites. So what that told us is that, like, yes, like, we definitely want to be working in collaboration with these partners, but we don't need to. And that was a very liberating realization, because it just sort of changed the dynamic of what we were doing and gave us a lot more leverage to really be pursuing what we thought was important rather than trying to fit into their news values, et cetera. So, so it's been a learning process, but I think it's not the only way that people find out about things anymore. So it would be lovely to have more coverage, and I know we're going to have more coverage this week as well. But we don't need that. You know, we'll find our audience in our own ways.
Well, you're doing very good work, Erin, and
thank you.
Necessary work. Best wishes and thanks for your time today.
Yeah, thanks so much, Joe.
Discoursemedia.org is the website for more. Erin Miller joined me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.